going to call to order the Technical Advisory Committee of AMATS, July 14th, 1:30 p.m. First order of business is to determine if there's a quorum, and there is. Next order of business would be the approval of the minutes May 12, 2016. Is there any additions or corrections?
Any questions approved?
Do I have a second?
Yes, for second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against, same sign. Moving on to the staff report, Curtis Baker with the financial progress report.
All right. Thank you. So the financial progress report is attachment 3A. For us, this is the end of the year, June 30th, start the new year. Well, we're in the new year now. Happy 2017. You'll see we expended about $1.394 million when our budget was about $1.6. So we will be carrying over that funding into the next fiscal year. But we were, ran a pretty healthy budget and pretty pleased with how we ended the year. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Seeing no questions, do I have a motion to approve?
Can I move to approve?
Wait there a second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Next is the technical progress report. Again, Curtis Baker.
All right, thank you. Just two things I want to let you know about. First is our sister agency in Columbus, MORPC, has been pushing a House bill called House Bill 528. And the purpose of that is to raise the permissive license tax fees by at least an additional $15 for local communities. I just wanted to put that on your radar. I know it's probably not a ton of money, but it would help, I think, both counties, and we've been talking recently about our funding issues. So I know the state is on recess right now, so if you do have opportunities to speak with your legislators, letting them know that that's something that is, would help your constituents, I think would be a good thing. Second thing, and this is not, I don't want to be Chicken Little, sky is falling, but there is a FHWA and FTA rule that's being proposed right now regarding how metropolitan planning organizations, what AMATS is, how they are composed. This rule is suggesting that, or would demand that urbanized areas, every community in an urbanized area has to belong to that MPO. What that would mean for Cleveland and Akron is that for AMATS, Hudson, Twinsburg, Aurora, Streetsboro, Reminderville would actually become Cleveland, NOAACA communities, whereas we would gain Wadsworth, possibly some of Stark County, and I don't know if there's anything else for us in there. But this is what they're trying to do is make our make the MPOs more efficient, and they think by correlating that to urbanized area, it would be. However, I think what they're ignoring is sort of 50 years of practice where it's by county. We were talking to Mickey and the county engineer in Portage County. He would potentially have to be representing three different MPOs if this rulemaking went into place because of East Gates urbanized area and Youngstown, Canton's urbanized area, AMATS urbanized area, and Cleveland, so I guess four. Again, this is something that we've been talking to our federal liaisons with, but it is something that I think especially for the communities that are technically in the Cleveland urbanized area, which like would include Streetsboro, Aurora, Hudson, Twinsburg, I believe Richfield as well. If this came to fruition, it could really change our organization quite a bit. Now, this rule guidance just came out at the end of June. So right now the comment period is open, which we will probably be making comments along with our statewide organizations about this. And obviously, as you can imagine, it really impacts areas where the urbanized areas all collide, which is we've got four of them. And so there are some challenges there. So I just wanted to, especially for those of you that would be potentially impacted by that, I wanted to let you know. Obviously, for the transit agencies, it would have a similar effect because then you would be you would need to be on multiple boards for each county that, or for each urbanized area that was represented in your county. So So it's sort of an interesting issue. We will keep you aware of it, of how it moves along and moves forward. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Curtis, can you provide a link that actually
yes.
puts comments
yeah.
if somebody wanted to comment?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That being all the discussion on that. The next.
Curtis, have you considered asking the policy committee to make a recommendation?
I have, and I think this, quite honestly, it wasn't until a couple days ago that we really kind of started to digest this issue, so I will be presenting it to policy as well and looking if there is a resolution slash comments that we would like to make. I mean, if the TAC felt like that would be something you'd like to recommend to the policy committee, I would take that to the policy committee to say that you guys were concerned enough about it as well. But I will present it to policy as well.
Curtis, House Bill 528, that was for driver's license or vehicle registration?
Registration fees, I believe.
Registration.
Yeah. And I can also, I will send out the link as well to the latest and greatest for that.
Any other discussion? Do you want to make a motion?
Yeah, I guess I would make a motion that TAC recommend to the policy committee to put in a comment for the rule guidance change to leave the boundaries to fall under the category.
Mm-hmm. Do I have a second?
I'll second that. Do you want?
Yield. Who wants to yield?
Okay, you have one, not John.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Moving to the next agenda item, AMAC Federal Funds Report.
Okay, thank you. As Curtis mentioned earlier, fiscal year 2016 is over, and it ended up being one of our best years at AMAC ever. We've funded over $30 million worth of AMAC projects. And this is more than usual, and this was made possible by borrowing around $7.5 million from other NPOs. However, in fiscal year 2016, we still have a balance of about $6 million, and that's primarily because early in the year, a lot of the projects, the bids for the projects came in lower than expected. And we also had two projects that were scheduled in the fourth quarter slip into 17 because the bids came in high and there wasn't time to regroup and rebid it in fiscal year 16. Two projects that we had to put into fiscal year 17, those two projects were worth about $5 million. So that is why we, even with all the funding that we did do, we still have a balance. Some of the projects I'd like to just highlight in 2016, some of our larger projects that we funded was East Summit Street in Kent. That project is well underway now. State Route 59, Interbelt Rerouting in Akron. I noticed that project just started, I think, last week, and it's happening right now, and it's hopefully they're making some, they'll make a lot of progress on it during the summer and have a lot of it done by the end of the construction season. And West Exchange, West Cedar Streets, Signals and Road Dive, is if that has not already started, it's real close to starting. So those were, there were a few, there were some other major projects, but those were three of our larger projects. Looking forward to fiscal year 17, unfortunately, the $7.5 million that we had to borrow in 16 will have to be paid back in in 17. So that will be a little less funding than for projects. So 17, I think, is going to actually be the opposite. It'll be a little, it'll be a light year for projects, for new projects. Something we're going to really push for in 17 is we're going to try to limit projects being scheduled in the fourth quarter. And we also have a new policy funding subcommittee. And we had our first meeting July 5th. And I'm looking forward to working with that committee in 17 to get some new ideas on our funding. So that's about all I have. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Thank you. Moving on to new business. We have the 2016 bike plan. Krista, that is them.
Hi, thank you. I'm just going to go over quickly kind of the purpose of the plan, what's all in it, what are the recommendations, and the purpose, you know, really this meeting, I think, is to make sure there's things that we didn't miss. See what, you know, your opinions are and kind of double check everything. But hopefully I'll give you a good overview of what we're really trying to accomplish with this and then go through the recommendations. The main purpose of the bike plan is, you know, really looking to create a regional bicycle framework. So identifying and evaluating the current system, looking at, you know, really trying to do like a safe, connected, and friendly network. And recommendations in this plan are eligible to go into the regional transportation plan that we'll be working on in the spring. So kind of just a brief overview. We've increased quite a bit for bike lanes and trails or shared use paths. In 2000, we had 80 miles, and now we have 180. And then for bike lanes, we've also gained about 10 miles. So we're slowly and steadily creeping up. This is a map of the existing bike lanes and trails. The bike lanes are in purple and the green are in the trails are green. Please, you know, take a look over this if there are any pieces we've missed. I already noticed in green on Chrisman there's one, and I know I talked, there's one in Twinsburg, a small along Liberty Road that we're adding, so please take a look at that. Here's the bike crashes. Two crash reports ago, we really started looking at bike and ped, because we haven't done a whole lot of analysis on this, but you can kind of see they do tend to be, you know, centered on the more urban areas, the universities, but they are still very scattered, so we haven't really been able to do a lot of analysis, you know, correlations with where there are lanes or trails. One thing that we looked at more in this plan than we had looked before is really looking at who are the audiences that are using the different trails and then tying that to what they need as far as looking at how to increase people for biking. So there's been several studies and surveys that kind of keep confirming the same data, but there's less than 1% of the population are your strong and fearless. The type of people who will ride, you know, they're on the road, they don't want a bike lane, they'll ride anywhere, any weather condition, without any kind of facility. And then there's a small percentage, about 7%, that are enthused and confident. That for the most part, they like a bike lane, but they'll ride with some traffic, they still like heavy traffic, kind of shorter trip distances. But the majority of people, 60%, are interested but concerned. And so these are people that may or may not ride a bike. They're interested in biking, but for the most part, they want completely separated bike lanes, or they want extremely low traffic, low-speed streets. And then there's about 33% that no matter what you do, they will never ride a bike. So, you know, what we're looking at, if we're trying to increase people in our area to commute, you know, you're really at 60% the interested in but concerned. You know, how do you target facilities that get them riding? Because they're the people, you're trying to move them to the more confident group. So really looking at, you know, what are their needs? And a lot of them, you know, are looking for, you know, as much separation from vehicles as possible. Safety is one of the number one concerns. Another issue is that even if there's people that are in kind of those top two groups that are very confident, the second that they have kids with them or other family members or friends, they tend to drop down as well and want more protected facility. So just, I think, you know, it was interesting to keep in mind just as far as, you know, how, what types of facilities we're designing, like who are we really trying to get. So kind of three overall goals for the plan is just increasing safety, connectivity, and making bike-friendly amenities. So safety is, you know, one of the things we really look at here. What are the facilities on the ground that we can do, from bike lanes to the trails to, you know, the hops signal that was just on Britton Road in the up and right-hand corner. So just different kinds of things. What are more of the design treatments and facilities that we can increase? Connectivity, really trying to make those connections. A lot of our trails, and we still have those kind of last mile connections to get to trails, connecting the major regional trails. And the top two pictures are Barberton and Kent, you know, how you connect to, making those connections to downtowns, in both of those, connecting the trails. And then making it more bike friendly, which this is something that, which was really easy to find pictures because our area has done a great job at this. But having amenities for cyclists and then also making it fun and making people feel welcome. So we have lots of different, Kent and Akron have done a lot of different bike racks that have different characteristics that either highlight universities or the businesses or just kind of fun. Like you see the Mr. Peanut in the top left. It was officially not a Mr. Peanut. And then you have all sorts of different wayfinding. Barberton and Kent, have, you can see different signs that have, you know, how far it is to bike to Watson Place, where are the trails. And then bike service stations are another thing that are starting to pop up, where you can, they have tools, you can get pump your tire. So just different amenities that really, I think, cater to cyclists and make them feel welcome, but also make it easier to bike. So with the recommendations, and you have the map in your packet as well, we have a few recommendations that are looking at broad policy, things like implementing complete streets plans, you know, looking at a lot of the things that the League of American Cyclists wants for bike-friendly cities. Then we also have specific map recommendations. And in the 2012 plan, we had a very broad list of recommendations that is probably not financially feasible in the next 100 years. So in this one, we tried to really look at what are the trails that are being actively worked on, more of that short to medium term. You know, what are the projects that we're really trying to push in the next couple of years, and really focusing on getting those done. And, you know, making those, connecting the major regional trails, making sort of, and extending those, and going from there. So I know I've had a couple comments. One is in Hiram, we gave back funding for a portion of that trail, but, you know, they're really still working on that and want that added. So I think there's projects like that. Liberty Road in Twinsburg, I was talking earlier, you know, they're really actively working on that, so I think we want to add that back in. So if there's any other things that people see, you know, please let me know or let us know that you think that really should be on there that your community is working on. But otherwise, you know, the goals really are trying to connect those regional trails and make those, you know, keep really those core trails and make sure we get those completed before we start spending money too much elsewhere. So I'd be happy to answer any questions on why we did things, or, you know, if you see things that you want to discuss now as far as adding them, but I'd be happy to take any questions.
And Chris, I think at this point, at the TAC level, if you do see something that you want to add, you know, because this is not fiscally constrained, this is meant to be an identifier, you know, we're happy to add them before the policy committee so they get in for final approval. I don't think that's, you know, a major concern at this point.
On the basis of that, in Hiram, we already have a funded trail. It was a mistake that we didn't put in there. It's funded, it's going to break ground here in October. So that that swings from 12 o'clock down to 4 o'clock, if you are, 3 o'clock on the clock. That trail is going to be funded. That is funded and it's about to be constructed. And the rest of it that we had planned on doing, where we did have to turn the funds back because we lost our local share, we're working with the various communities in that area, talking about applying for a Connect Communities grant and to identify how to do it between Garrettsville, Hiram, and Mantua. And so we're working on that right now. The politicians are talking about it, some staff. And so we want to put that back in, partially because we spent $100,000 on identifying which the best route was going to be. And it's had all the public hearings and so forth. So, but anyway, so that's why we'll be, we'll send an email. And want me to make a motion here about adding that back in, or should, how do you want to handle that?
I think a motion would probably be best, would be the most
formal. All right, and I move that the funded trail that Hiram is about to construct be added back in, and the recommended trail that we had in the 2012 plan be put back in.
I'll second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Can I ask any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same side. A motion passes.
Thank you.
Anybody else before I go? Okay, I would like to make a motion that the in the city of Twinsburg, last year we constructed with ANAT's money with PE funds a section of trail from the Solon border tying into their trail, which goes all the way up into their Metro Park system, which you don't see on the map, to Post Road. That's an existing trail. And then I would also like to add Post Trail, continuing Post Road down to Cannon Road, which completes the Liberty Corridor. Right now the trail ends at, it's the Nature Center for Metro Parks. We have another active recreational center at the lower end of Liberty Park, trying to make this accessible to people. So that would be my motion to add the existing trail and the proposed trail all the way down to Cannon Road on Liberty Road. Do I have a second?
I'll second, Paul.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Do we have any other? Tony?
Yeah, I don't know if it needs a motion or just a comment from Matt. We added a bike lane on State Road from Grand Road to Quick Road.
No, not on there. Oh, okay. I'm sure I did that.
Right, that's an existing bike lane.
Yeah, I don't think that needs a motion. Yeah.
Jeff?
Chris, I noticed we include the Magic Mile on that as part of it. I didn't see the Magic Mile actually that it was part of the Connecting Communities grant. Or is it included into that and it's just not drilled down?
The funded portion, if you look really close, it shows up the part that's funded along Wooster. And then we have a continuing on.
For that Metro Park
project.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we don't have the park in North on 2nd Street.
Okay.
Which we could add that in. Or I think at this level, kind of which way you would go would still be considered on there. But I think if you feel more comfortable, because it does show us funded and it does show the trail continuing from there.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about using this, for future grant opportunities down the road. And with that, when we apply, if it's part of something, it just might be nice to have that listed somewhere.
Okay.
So I don't know, do we need a motion for that, or would we just, is that just a correction with?
It's a new section that you want to show?
We have that section that's funded with the Magic Mile according to Connecting Communities
grant. Right, it's going up the lake.
Goes up to the lake, down 2nd, up around Park, and then down 2nd Street back over to the towpath.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of circles that area.
So that would be considered existing, because it's already funded and already moving forward.
A portion of it's funded.
Yeah.
The portion that's not funded, not moving forward, would be the portion you need the motion to get added.
Yeah.
They can do the existing.
Okay.
Existing.
Yeah. So I'd like to make a motion then to add that exist
the, second,
the other section as identified in the Connecting Communities grant.
Do I have a second?
All in second.
Any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion passed. Any other communities want to add anything at this time? And I would suggest if you don't have anything at this time, if you do find something in the next week, policy does meet next week, and you can amend it at that meeting as well.
So please, yeah, give me a few.
Okay. So with that being said, I need a motion to approve as amended the 2016 bike plan.
So
moved.
I'll second.
Made the motion.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same side. Motion passes. Next, we'll move on to the highway preservation needs. This will be presented by Amy Fett.
Multiplied it times the 5% for each category,
And then we came up with the lane miles replaced in that time frame and multiplied it times the cost per lane mile that ODOT provided. And we came up with a 0.15 million total cost for replacement of pavement. We also calculated bridge preservation, and we calculated how many bridges that were 20 plus feet in Summit, Portage, and Chippewa, and Duncan townships of Wayne County. Obviously, there's no turnpike in Chippewa and Duncan townships, but we calculated how many bridges total and how much deck area. We also used the same as last time, we used the same frequency. We assumed 17 years for painting steel structures. We also used 17 years for deck overlays on bridge. We assumed a 50-year deck replacement and an 80-year superstructure replacement for all bridges. And then those are also costs that we received from ODOT in $2016. Costs were estimated by dividing by the 25 years between now and 2040, and then multiplying times the corresponding year. And we basically, we didn't try to pinpoint exactly which bridges would need replaced. We just took a straight percentage. Here is the bridge preservation. It's the total deck area that would need replaced or overlaid or painted, and then the cost per square foot, and then we came up with a total cost of about $1.9 billion. So the total cost of resurfacing, replacement, and preservation would be about $3.22 billion between now and 2040, and that's in 2016 dollars. That does not account for any inflation whatsoever. So this report will be used in the future once we come up with our recommendations for the plan to determine how many projects we will be able to fund to be fiscally constrained in our plan and how many projects that we need to have reserved for preservation. Any questions?
Sorry. Go ahead.
Observation.
Yes.
That only covers 25% of our roadways.
We do not fund local roads.
We can have to fund.
Yes.
But we, the locals, fund 4 times a million.
Yes.
Roads. I think that ought to be brought up in the summary as a bullet point of what we are neglecting, all the local streets, and then the cost, because this report will go up very high. We got hammer home the point, we ain't got enough funds to do our work.
Well, part of the
and that is, you got to talk about the locals and getting money for the gas tax or license plate fee or something else to get the matching funds and get the 100% funds for the work we're responsible for. So I'd ask that the summary be amended to include the highlighted section, not necessarily in detail, but a statement that bill still uncovers 3,000, only covers 1,000 of the 4,000 miles we're responsible. Because we only have responsibility.
Yeah. I think that's something that we could do. And I mean, I think what I was going to say, Joe, just on top of that is like the number is so huge and it doesn't cover everything. And, you know, it in a way, yeah, it's kind of like a boring topic, but in another way, it's probably the most important. And I mean, and yes, it's high level estimating, but it's still $3 billion for the greater Akron area. You know, we're not even talking, I mean, you know, where is that money going to come from? And so I think that's a good point, and I think that's something that we could definitely add in before it goes to policy committee, get amended.
Any other questions?
Comments? Do a motion with the amendment? Motion.
Okay, I need a motion to approve the highway preservation needs plan with the amendment that the summary include a reference to the local roadway network and costs associated with
it. I shall move, and I move with the addition that he mentioned not just as a note, but as an emphasis, that three-fourths of the roads are not included in this. They're in need of maintenance, and they're not included in this report.
Second.
Any further discussion? The vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion passes. The next agenda is Driving Metro Forward with Alex. Alex is presenting.
Yes. Hey, Alex. I'm broken apart here for everyone who can hear me and see over me. Is that okay? So, as mentioned, I'm Alex Harnos. I'm the transit service planner for Akron Metro RTA. This project that we're calling Driving Metro Forward is in its second phase right now. It's an outgrowth of some recommendations from our board. Essentially, during last year's budgeting time period, we were looking at adding some more frequency to our backbone routes, our number one, West Market Street, and our number two, South Arlington. A lot of pieces of our schedule are really key to those routes, and we recognized that there would be a huge education effort, a huge outreach effort to teach people to use the new schedule, lots of work for our schedulers, for our GIS folks. And the board said, well, if you're going to do all that, reorganize everything. Think big. And so this is the outgrowth of that. This is the big thinking. So I want to present a couple of the major ideas of the plan. Next to your agendas outside, we included an FAQ for the project and a front-back map that shows the existing conditions for weekday, daytime, and on the reverse, the proposed conditions for weekday daytime. There's a lot more maps and things available on our website, but I'll refer to those two maps a little bit during my presentation. So I always like to start off with Metro's mission. We've made a lot of strides over the past couple of years towards the safe part of that mission by increasing security, by improving maintenance procedures, by focusing safety forces at the transit center. But this project is really focused on the dependable, and cost-effective, and customer-focused aspects of our mission that I think are very important for going forward and for growing our ridership. So we took some big concepts out to the public in April and sort of said, what is the system that you would like to see for the future of Suffolk County look like? Is it what we're thinking, or is it something different? And from those 13 public meetings, we heard three things over and over again. I should back up a second. In addition to the public meetings, we also surveyed our operators, our customer service staff, our road supervisors, basically all of our frontline staff. And we got the same comments as we got from the public. The three things that we could do to improve our service are to increase frequency, how often the bus comes past your door, to simplify schedules to a clock-based headway. In the mid-2000s, during our sort of budget crisis, we took our schedule and made it as efficient as possible, squeezed every minute out of every dollar. If a route takes 34 minutes to run, we schedule it for 34 minutes. Can you remember that the bus comes every 34 minutes and how to do that math in your mind? Probably not off the top of your head. So not having those clock-based headways, the bus comes every 30 minutes, every 20 minutes, every hour, like you see in most transit systems, makes it difficult for new people to learn the system, makes it difficult to ride it day to day. And the third thing that we hear all the time, and we've heard again in these public meetings, was to increase our service span, more hours in the early morning, in the late evening, and on the weekends. So we took this feedback back to our board and to our leadership team, and they said, great, do those things, but don't spend any more money. So, how do we do that? We looked at some other transit systems that have done similar cost-neutral reorganizations of their service. And there's basically three ways you can squeeze more service out of the same number of revenue hours. There's a look at places where you duplicate service, places where you run buses down the same street or within a couple blocks of each other at the same time. You look at unproductive trips and segments, places where maybe you shouldn't be going with a 40-foot bus, or maybe you shouldn't be going with a 40-foot bus at certain times of the day. The third place that most transit agencies look at when they're doing this sort of project is schedule efficiency. I just mentioned our schedule was made super tight. It was in 2000. I didn't find a whole lot of hours in schedule efficiency. But those are the three places that you look. So these were the guiding principles that we took out to the public in phase one as just kind of big ideas, big concepts, and said, how do you think we should approach this? Are these the goals that we should be pursuing? For the most part, we got a positive response to these goals, but they're just sort of ideas. So for phase two, we brought a map proposal, and we said, this is how we think this proposal matches to those goals you told us we're pursuing. So I'll give you a few highlights of how we believe this proposal matches these guiding principles. So this chart is a ridership chart for the number one inbound, the riders per day. And so across the bottom are the time that the trip begins out in Montrose in military time, so 4:49 a.m., 5:41 across. The bar goes up to how many seats on the bus are filled, and you see our seated capacity for our 40-footers and for our big accordion articulated buses. If I showed you this chart for freeway volume, or I showed you this chart for transit commuting in Chicago or Los Angeles or even Cleveland, you'd see two big peaks in the morning commute and in the after school, after work commute. We don't see that in our system. Our riders travel at all times of day. They work retail jobs, they work service jobs, they work, you know, third shift industrial jobs. They're all over the place at all times of day. The places that we see big loads, loads that are more than we can carry in seated capacity, are when the buses are really far apart. 5:30 p.m., next bus isn't until 6:44. It's no secret there that we're overfull because it's been too long in between trips. So we're looking to match service to modern travel demands by responding to what our actual travel demand is throughout the day. Really, that's spread more evenly. So the proposed system provides consistent service from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and reduced service from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Every line that we've designed fits into that bucket, and we believe we can match to the demand better than we do right now. The second place we need to match to modern travel patterns, and this is one of those big sources of revenue hours to reallocate, are underutilized trips. So this is the 102 up to Northfield, takes Route 8 for most of its routing, and then goes through the industrial employment centers up there. This route serves the reverse commute. They're largely people from the core city neighborhoods, Akron, Barberton Falls, going up to industrial employment in Northfield and Twinsburg. Early morning outbound trips perform pretty well. They do what you'd expect a reverse commute route to do. Same people come back in the afternoon. But in the middle, these trips are essentially empty. You can see 10 a.m. outbound from the transit center, average one person a day in April of 2016. And on the return, it was less than a person a day. If you divide the operating cost by the route, it costs us $131 to provide each of those rides. That's a ride that we charge $1.25 for. So while we recognize that it's important to go to these locations and to support the reverse commute, there are times of day where that level of subsidy is just not sustainable, and we could be doing something a lot better with that bus at that time. So the proposed system that's on your map reduces suburban revenue hours on our purely suburban routes, our 100 series routes, from 116 hours a day to about 54. And those hours would be used in other places in the system where we believe they would be more effective. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. We see a slightly different but similar pattern on our circulator routes, our small 35-foot buses that go around the Montrose area, that go around the Chapel Hill area. During the business day, they do what they're supposed to do, but at night, they're empty. Keeping in mind that number one trip where there's 70 minutes in between and we're overloaded, same time of day, the number 50 is empty. That's a clear mismatch. We could be moving that bus onto line service and filling it up much more effectively. So this is another place we found some revenue hours. The other place is that duplicated service. This is a great example for today because we're sitting in this map. So in the current system, the number 30 comes in from Goodyear Heights, number 6 from out in Lakemore, 110 from down in Green. They all sort of meet up here on East Market Street. The 19 from Chapel Hill area joins in, and everybody goes down East Market Street together into downtown. Same thing coming back out. If they're going or coming from a lineup, sometimes these buses are running back to back. They're duplicating service. They're not giving extra time. So what we're proposing are a series of sort of neighborhood transit hubs, 2-3 miles outside of the downtown core, where these neighborhood buses would meet. We would ask our customers to transfer to a higher frequency trunk line if they need to complete their trip into downtown. So we'd be looking to establish a place around this area in the East End where these neighborhood buses could meet and one bus go down East Market. Similarly, in the Portage Crossing area, Cuyahoga Falls, somewhere on Wallhaven, downtown Barberton, and our existing hubs at Rolling Acres and Independence Turnaround at Chapel Hill.
Would these be similar to the transit center but on a smaller scale?
They could be. If we were able to find a piece of property that was appropriate, we could get in, could get out of, we'd probably like to build something that would look similar to our little transit center out at Rolling Acres. That might not happen in a year or 2 years. These might be on-street facilities initially, and then we're looking for property. But at least for some of these hub locations, yeah, we'd be looking for big improvement. So the other place that we're trying to strengthen network structure is to allow trips that don't go downtown. One thing we heard, this is our existing map. This is looking at sort of the west side. The purple line is I-77. Drawing this way, this is Hawkins Avenue. We hear a lot from people in these sort of West Akron neighborhoods. I can't go shopping in Montrose, or I can't go to Wallhaven or to Highland Square because I have to take a long bus downtown and I have to come back out. Our proposal establishes a crosstown route up and down Hawkins Avenue, connecting 6 of those radial routes so that those transfers are possible. It allows the Copley Road and the Delia Avenue, our current number 3 and number 4, to get more frequency by shortening the route and putting their sort of outer segments onto this crosstown. Again, matching the service to the demand. Our third principle was to simplify the routes. Right now, we've got a very complex schedule, very complex transfer arrangements downtown at the transit center. They're sort of at odd, customized times. What we would like to do is to put all of our routes on cycles that are divisible by either 20 or 30 minutes. This would allow us to have essentially a lineup where all the buses are downtown, whether they come every 20 minutes, every 30 minutes, every 40 minutes, or every 60 minutes, everybody is downtown every 2 hours. And for the more frequent buses, they meet up more often than that. I think it would be easier to remember, easier to digest, easier for new people to learn, and it's something we hear requests for a lot. The other way to simplify is to break long, complicated routes into understandable chunks that are easier for our customers to use and easier for our operators to keep on time. The number 14 that leaves downtown, travels out Euclid Avenue towards Rolling Acres, down through the east side of Barberton, out to the far end of Barberton, currently has 10 different patterns, 10 different things it can do when it leaves downtown as a number 14. That's hard to learn. That's hard to understand. So what's in our proposal is to break that route into 3 chunks where we could match the service, again, to the demand in an appropriate way. We have a route of half-hour frequency from downtown to our Rolling Acres Transfer Center, another half-hour frequency route from Rolling Acres to downtown Barberton, and a third sort of horseshoe-shaped Barberton circulator type of thing. We don't know exactly what we'll call it yet. To reach some of Stark State, North Plaza, and these industrial employment areas out here. again, we can match the hours and the frequency to the demand that we see there. This is the exciting part of the proposal. This is what I'm really excited to show you, and we're getting towards the end here. Our fourth principle was to enable a transit-first lifestyle. And this is what our master plan from 2012, is that right, Chris, recommended. And we have not been able to take action on up until now. These are six corridors that currently serve over 60% of our boardings on an average weekday, where we're recommending 20-minute frequency of service and 30-minute frequency of service in the evenings. So 68% of our existing customers use bus stops within a quarter mile of these lines. That would be a huge improvement for those 68%. If you expand that to the 30-minute network that's on your map as green lines, it covers about 90% of our existing boards. The proposal, as it stands now, would adversely affect about 5% of our existing riders. And I'll break that number out in a little bit, but I want to tell you some more good news about the proposed network. So right now we have no 20-minute frequency service. There's a couple times a day where a number one or a number two come 20 minutes apart in the so-called commuting peak, which doesn't really exist for us. But they average 24, 25 minutes in between a number one or a number two. So we have no 20-minute all-day service. Our 30-minute or better service covers 24% of the jobs in the county based on a data set that we bought from the Hoopers geographic data collection people last year. The 20-minute network that we proposed, those yellow lines on the map in the previous slide, we covered 34% of the jobs in Summit County with 20-minute frequency service. We're talking about total population. Right now, our 30-minute service covers about 5% of our county population. We know that less than 2% of Summit County residents are transit riders right now. Regular transit riders, commuters, daily ride people. If we're only covering 5% of the county with decent service, that's not surprising. That's not any secret. The 20-minute network we're proposing would cover 12% of county residents. We think that offering service at that level is bound to boost our ridership. We always have to look at protected populations. That's part of our mandate from the FTA, from the FHWA. So the 30-minute network currently covers 9% of minorities, 11% of low-income residents, and 46% of seniors. If we implemented that 20-minute network of six routes, we'd be covering 24% of minorities, 25% of low-income residents, and 9% of seniors with that 20-minute service. Huge improvements across the board for all of our protected populations. So here's the boil-down slide. This is really what moved our board to tell us to get started on this. Right now, as we measure our cost in revenue hours, because our biggest expense is the operator. They get paid hourly, so it's an easy way to measure that. Currently, we have operators out on the street running buses with the doors open 1,022 hours on a weekday. They spend 789 of those hours, 77% of them on the urban service, routes 1 through 34. But those services generate 93% of our rides. That 11% on the purely suburban stuff generates 2% of our rides. It's a huge mismatch. It's those midday big bus up in the fringes of the county that's causing that mismatch, essentially. Same thing with the circulator services. So what we proposed is about a 1.5% increase in revenue hours. So again, nearly cost neutral proposal, but moving a considerable number of hours from the suburban and circulator categories into the urban service, where we believe they can be more effective, grow our ridership, and really provide service in the dense, walkable urban neighborhoods that are and have always been supportive of transit. So I told you I'd come back to the downside. April 2016, we averaged 18,800 boardings on a weekday. We're able now, with our new technology, to break those out stop by stop. The current proposal is the way that it's drawn, with eliminating 120 bus stops that would then have no walking distance alternative. We see 119 boardings at those stops every day now, on average. So that's less than 1% of our total boardings, people that would not have a walking distance alternative. There are 177 stops that would close, but there would be better, more frequent service available within a quarter mile. So 2-3 block walk to better service. We believe that's a trade-off that most of those people would be willing to make. And there's another 273 stops that would have reductions in time, reductions in the number of trips available per day, or you know, the frequency of travel. That's about 2.5% of our daily ridership. So overall, about 5% of our customers are going to be upset with us. We've already heard from many of them via email, via phone, via public meeting. We're trying to address their concerns as best we can. We're looking at other alternatives for those outlying areas during the midday and the evening when that reverse commute trend is not strong enough to support big bus trips. So all that sort of stuff is in the works, and we would like to hear your input on that. So this is essentially, this is the last slide, but it is a table representation of the map that you have in front of you. But what I direct your attention to specifically is the number of trips per day. So right now there are 38 trips per day on the number one, our busiest route out West Market Street. But the proposal would elevate that to 52 trips per day. And you can see similar gains throughout the urban system that we believe will really help us to have a bigger impact on these communities, to serve our existing riders better, and to grow our ridership. Again, from that population, the 12% of the county that would see that frequent network. So I would say that I'd be happy to talk to you specifically about your community, but I know that there are a lot of communities here that aren't even in our service area. So I'd ask that if you want us to talk specifically about your town, your municipality, find me at the back of the room, give me a call, shoot me an email over the next couple days. I'd be happy to talk to you, sit down with you, share specific maps. But if you've got questions or comments sort of about the project as a whole that you'd like heard in front of the group, I'd be happy to take those now.
How many different size buses do you have? That big,
right. So right now we have basically four different types of vehicles in our fleet. We've got the over-the-road coaches that run our Cleveland Express service, the big red and purple ones. We've got a small number. We've got six of the 52-foot articulated buses. The majority of our fleet are 40-footers, and then we've got some 35s that do the ball circulators and things like that. That's the line service. And then, of course, there's the small paratransit buses, but that's out of my purview. That's paratransit side. Yes?
Have you considered subsidized taxi or Uber service?
We've explored some agencies that are developing partnerships with Uber and Lyft and services like that. I would say the biggest challenge there that other transit agencies who have partnered with agencies like that find is the ADA challenge. Our operators who do paratransit are trained in assisting folks, and they also have access to wheelchair lift. So equitability is really the big question there. And there's a lot of systems in Florida that are working on that. I think that in the next couple months, we'll really see what the viability of that is, and if the industry as a whole will get a better feel for it.
That and background checks are probably the biggest.
Yeah, safety and accessibility. Yes?
So I hope that Metro is doing something in terms of real-time tracking.
We are.
Okay, just briefly.
Absolutely. So actually, a lot of this data comes from sort of the back-end side of that system. So all of our fleet right now is equipped with what we call automatic vehicle location, which is essentially a GPS and a computer on every bus. It feeds back information about every time the bus departs a stop, every time it arrives at the end of the line, all sorts of timing and schedule adherence data. It also automatically counts passengers on and passengers off the bus. That's how we get down to that stop level data that we're now able to analyze. On the public side, We've already rolled out our text for next bus function. So every bus stop sign has a four-digit code and a phone number. You send a text with that four-digit code to the number listed on the sign. It will give you real-time arrival information for the next, I think it's three buses through that stop, which is very cool. We see a couple hundred requests a day, and it's grown month over month exponentially since we rolled it out to the public in December. What you'll see in August is the full functionality of that service rolled out to the public. So there'll be a website where you can literally look at the map and watch all the buses move around the city. You can basically ask for alerts to your stop. So if you have a stop near your home or near your place of work and you want to know, you know, when is my trip coming, you can set times. I want to know when the first trip after 4 p.m. is coming so that I know when to go outside after work. It'll tell you that. Send you a text or an email every day. Our marketing department will be rolling out all sorts of stuff about that over the next couple weeks and months. So that's the short commercial for that stuff.
Alex, you should share the web address for the material.
Absolutely. So in addition to this presentation, which is on the web, and the maps that are in your packet, there are maps that detail the weekend proposals, where service cuts are proposed, and a number of other things. And that's at akronmetro.org/drivingforward. There's also a project-specific email box that comes to me, to Chris, and to some of the other planning group, and that's just drivingforward@akronmetro.org. So if you got a comment, a question about the project, it's probably the best way to get to us, because it goes to all of us, and it doesn't go in with our regular million emails. So any other sort of system-wise?
I would just add, Alex, that you know, we're really interested in talking to everybody and anybody who wants to talk transit. If you've got constituents that you think need to know more about this or that we should go and talk to, please send us an email or give us a call. We'll go there.
I think there's one piece of key information that is in the FAQ, but I don't think I said out loud, is that the proposed rollout for all this stuff is August of 2017. So we've got a year, essentially, to get it right, get a schedule cut, and figure out all the details. So the time to comment and the time to have your voice and your constituents' voice heard is now. And we're happy to, again, talk to anyone who wants to talk transit. So thanks for your time. I know it's a little longer than sometimes people go here, but I hope that I was able to reduce about 9 months of work from a lot of different people into 15, 20 minutes. So thank you again.
Thank you, Al. Mm-hmm. The next agenda item are the resolutions. We have Resolution 2016-09, Connecting Communities Planning Grant, and I have Crystal Benson.
Hi, thank you. This is our fourth round of Connecting Communities Planning Grants. We have about $100,000. We had 13 applications requesting about $360,000. We scored them internally. I know we met with the task force and reviewed all the scores and came up with a recommendation. We have four communities that we recommended. They were the City of Penn and ODOT, the City of Hudson, City of Twinsburg, and the City of Green. A lot of those were looking at different master connectivity plans, some road diets, but a lot of different things that really look at promoting connecting land use and transportation. I think we're very excited about those. The entire scores are in your packet. Two things to note that we changed. Under product cost, we used to not require any match, and while we still don't, we did award extra points if you provided a sliding scale. We provided a local match, and then we also provided extra points if you asked for less than the cap of $50,000. So we were able to, last three rounds, we had $100,000, and we just did two projects. This time we were able to get four projects. We leveraged about $75,000 extra dollars. So I think, you know, we thought that was a great success in getting more money and more projects out into the community. I would be happy to answer any questions about scoring or anything in specific, but otherwise, That is it.
Any questions or comments? Okay, then I would need a motion to approve the resolution 2016-09.
So move that motion.
Weekly.
Do you have a second?
I'll second.
Second. Any other further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The resolution passes. The next is resolution 2016-10, approving amendment number 6 to the Transportation Improvement Program fiscal year 2016 to 2019 to revise capital funding for PARTA. Jeff Gardner will be presenting.
Thank you. This resolution seeks to add additional federal funds to the TIP for PARTA in fiscal year 2017. The purpose of PARTA's request is to extend the useful life of 3 of their current buses. Three buses are 35-foot buses built in 2005. The federal funds come from the Federal Transit Administration and are allocated to PARTA for capital expenses. PARTA does have the Amex attributable federal funds and the local share available to expedite this request. This project will be funded at 80% federal share, derived from FTA Section 5307 funds. The federal share will be added to in the amount of $309,600, with a local share of approximately $77,000. The total added cost is $387,000, amended to their existing preventive maintenance budget. This amendment will allow PARTA to extend the useful life of their current vehicle inventory. Resolution 2016-10 is consistent with the regional transportation plan, is financially constrained, air quality neutral, and meets requirements for public involvement and environmental justice. The staff is requesting approval of Resolution 2016-10. Are there any questions?
Hearing no questions, can I have a motion to approve?
Do you move to approve?
I'll second. I have a motion. I have a second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Resolution passes.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one thing, and I think a lot of you know, but AMATS is actually going to be losing 2 employees here coming in the end of July, and both have provided quite a bit of service to our agency. Victor Bodison is going to be taking a position with the City of Akron late in July, early August. Dave Poulet will be taking over his duties and managing the TIP. And also, Krista Bettison has decided not to drive 50 minutes to work and back from Youngstown and has taken a position with the Township of Boardman. So we're really excited for both of them. They're going to be missed, but so probably the last opportunity you get to see them, and I think, you know, obviously even with the presentations today, they do great work, and they will be missed. But I just want to let everyone know and say congratulations on the new positions. So.
Okay, with no other business on the table, I need a motion to adjourn.
Don't so move.
I'll take Jim forward the motion that. And Wayne with a second. Can I have a vote? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All against, same time. Great, there it is.